Good afternoon. My name is John, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw the question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mandy Cohen, you may begin the conference call.
Great. Thank you, and thank you to everyone who's joined the conference call today. This is Mandy Cohen from the Innovation Center at CMS, and I'm joined by my colleagues here who are here to provide you an announcement about three new initiatives from the Innovation Center around accountable care organizations. I just want, before I turn the program over to Dr. Berwick, I just wanted to remind folks that this call is for stakeholders only and is closed to press, and we will be taking questions at the end of the call. If you do have any additional questions, you can visit the Innovation Center website at www.innovations.cms.gov. And now I'll turn the program over to Dr. Berwick, the CMS Administrator.
Thanks a lot, Mandy, and thank you all for joining us on this call. I'm excited about the announcements that are being made today. I want to share with you some of the background, and then we'll be joined by my colleagues from Medicare and the Innovation Center. We're here this afternoon to discuss some new options that will apply to a range of providers across the healthcare spectrum who are considering becoming a part of the program for accountable care organizations. That's part of the options in the Affordable Care Act. Accountable care organizations, ACOs, is one of the most innovative ideas in the Affordable Care Act, in my opinion, helping us to move toward a healthcare delivery system that is high quality, meeting the needs of patients and families, and sustainable over the long haul. We know that the better path, the right path towards sustainability, it shouldn't be, through cutting care or slimming down coverage or withholding services from people. It has to be through changing care, through improving care, to make it both sustainable and high quality. And we can have that. We can have better care, better health, and lower cost if we put patients at the center of the healthcare delivery system and change that delivery system to better perform to meet those patients' needs. The Accountable Care Organization, the ACO, is one really important route to that vision. The idea behind the Accountable Care Organization, the ACO, is to encourage and support physicians and hospitals and other providers of care to reduce costs by providing better quality care, and then to reward those providers for success in doing that by allowing them to share in the savings that would result. This would lead to better, more coordinated care for patients, and at the same time deliver savings to those patients and families and providers and taxpayers. This is about rewarding the quality of care that's delivered, not just the quantity of services delivered. So ACOs aren't just a new way to pay for health care. They're a new and better way to deliver health care. 2 months ago, CMS published its initial proposed rule on how to implement the ACO program, and we're now in the midst of the public comment period, which closes on June 6th, which allows us to listen very closely to input from all sorts of stakeholders so that we can modify and improve the proposed rule into an even better final rule. That's a very challenging job because the ground rules for ACOs have to strike several important balances. For example, they have to give providers incentives to achieve savings and tools through improvement of care to help them coordinate and improve care, but we also need to make sure that providers' care don't stint on care. They don't withhold care when it's needed. We need to make sure that patients get much better coordinated care, but we don't need to burden providers with rafts of regulations in the effort to encourage them to do that. It needs to enable close relationships between primary care providers and specialists, but we also, under the law, need to make sure that patients and ACOs retain the right of choice. They have the right to see any Medicare provider they want. ACOs need data, but patients also need guarantees of that their privacy will be protected. These are all important balances to strike, and it's important we get those balances right, since accountable care organizations are a critical model in the reform of the healthcare delivery system. Because they're so critical, the proposed rule has understandably been the center of attention. It's attracted lots and lots of comments since the release of the proposed rule, and that's good news. We are in this period of listening and dialogue, which will lead to a better final rule. We're reaching out with our partner agencies to hold feedback sessions, to solicit input from all sorts of stakeholders, physicians and hospitals and patient advocates and many more on the proposed rule so we can get the right balances struck in the final rule. As we work toward that balance, even now, today, we're announcing a series of new initiatives that will help us hit the ground running and will give providers from many different kinds of backgrounds and of many different sizes the ability to participate in the ACO program. And let me describe three initiatives we're announcing today for starters from the Innovation Center. The first initiative is the Pioneer ACO program. The Pioneer ACO program is going to offer an accelerated pathway to forming an ACO for providers of care who are already ahead of the pack. They're already able to offer coordinated care. They have the infrastructure, information systems, and models that they're familiar with already. So they're ready to start now, even before the new regulations go into effect. The Pioneer ACO program will allow provider groups to move very rapidly from a shared savings payment model to a population-based payment model on a track that's consistent with, it's synergistic with, although it's separate from the Medicare Shared Savings Program reflected in that proposed rule. The Pioneer ACO program is designed to work in coordination with private payers by aligning incentives with private payers for the providers, and that'll help the providers improve quality and health outcomes for patients right across their practices. So that's the first announcement, the Pioneer ACO program. The second announcement is a request. It's a request for comments on a proposal from the Innovation Center and CMS to provide upfront payments, advance payments to providers who want to form ACOs but who don't have the capital to create one. They can't afford it, start the information systems or the care coordination services that will make up the improvements in care that the ACOs can rely on. Some of the early comments we've been receiving on the proposed rule do suggest that some providers lack ready access to the capital that they need to invest in these infrastructures and coordinating staff and so on. And providers who lack access to the capital could make those investments by accessing shared savings early under this proposal for advanced payment on which we're now going to seek comment. The third announcement today is for all providers that are interested in forming an ACO. The CMS Innovation Center is about to offer a series of four ACO learning sessions, supports to help providers who want to learn how to build ACOs. Participating in these learning sessions isn't going to be a factor at all in the selection or qualification or participation of any CMS, any provider in the CMS ACO program, but these supports are going to be very useful in giving providers access to knowledge and expertise that they need to set up ACOs. So those are our three announcements today, a Pioneer program, an advanced request for comment on an advanced payment model, and a learning and assistance program under the Innovation Center. In all of this, we've been really impressed by the level of engagement on this topic. We're hearing lots of feedback, lots of dialogue. People seem to be sensing that we are at the threshold of an important and a very, very productive change. And coming up with a workable, promising framework for ACOs that allow many to play based on this stakeholder feedback is going to be well worth the effort. With that as background to these rules, we're happy to take your questions. I'm joined here by John Blum, who heads Medicare, and Rick Gofillan, who's the head of the Innovation Center, and Peter Lee, the deputy head of the Innovation Center. And we're open for questions now.
Thanks, operator. We're open for questions.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Lisa Grabert from American Hospital. Your line is open.
Thank you, and thank you very much for holding this call today. I had a clarifying question for the Pioneer ACOs. One of the requirements that is built in is for ACOs to have at least 50% of their total revenues derived from outcomes-based contracts by the end of the second performance year. Can you expand a little bit about what you mean by 50%? Would that 50% include their Medicare portion of business? And also, can you expound on the outcomes-based contracts, exactly what you're targeting there?
Sure. I'll invite Rick and Peter to comment just generally. It is, as you say, what we would like is for the Pioneer ACOs to be regarding the management of better coordinated care for patients right across their patient panels, Medicare patients and others. So we're really encouraging synergy here between the commercial payment side of their work and the Medicare side. Rick and Peter, you want to comment?
Well, I think that's exactly right, Don. And we would include the Medicare portion of their of their business in that calculation. We were thinking that they may have other contracts with other payers that might account for 25%, and then Medicare, their fee-for-service business in Medicare would account for another 25% as an example. So it's really about encouraging folks to move aggressively into this new world, and many of these organizations already have a significant part of their business operating under these contracts. And when we say outcomes-based, we think that whether it's a shared savings model or some other approach that aligns the efforts of the organization with producing better health, better care, reduced costs through improvement, those kind of models will vary significantly in how they're structured in contracts. But the general notion that they are outcomes-based as opposed to based simply on volume is what we're after. And built into that would be an expectation that there'd be substantial quality incentives as part of the calculation of their reimbursement in other models.
If I could just ask one clarifying question, would you include participating in, say, for example, a hospital value-based purchasing program as an outcomes-based contract?
We probably have to understand it in a little bit more detail. One of our goals will be to understand and engage, really, in a conversation with the industry around what that definition should be and whether or not a particular contract seems to be sufficiently congruent with the overall outcome, the three-part aim outcome that we're after. I think that's what's central. We're after folks who are interested in pursuing those same three-part aims of better care, better health, and reduced costs through improvement.
Thank you, Lisa. Operator, next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Scott Pingree from Intermountain Health. Your line is open. Scott Pingree, your line is open. Your next question comes from the line of Stephen Bernstein from University of Michigan. Your line is open. Your next question comes from the line of Emily Brower from Harvard Vanguard. Your line's open.
Hi, actually it's Marcy Sindel from Harvard Vanguard. The question relates to the quality measures that you're envisioning for this program. So one of the concerns about the 65 quality measures in the shared savings program is that it's not clear what the threshold or comparison is going to be, since many of the measures are not currently measured today by either the Medicare fee-for-service or Medicare Advantage groups. What are you thinking around the quality measures for the Pioneer ACO program and how they're different? And then the second part of the question is whether you can elaborate a bit on how this works with private payers.
How this works with private payers, yeah. On the quality side, I'll just make a comment. This is Don. Marcy, how are you? This is a very important balancing a component of both the proposed rule and the Pioneer program. As we reward organizations for reducing costs, we have to work with them hard to watch quality to make sure the care is improving and that costs aren't being reduced by withholding needed care. So the quality metrics are crucial. As you said, in the proposed rule, we've listed 65 proposed quality measures. We'll be taking feedback on these, learning how people regard them, and coming up with the package of metrics that will be best to use in the final rule. Our commitment is to align the quality metric system of the Pioneer Group with the mainstream 3022 ACO proposed rule. Ricky, you may want to comment on that and also on the second part of Nancy's question.
I think that covers the issue on the quality metrics. I think on the alignment with private payers, our goal will be to know that, again, if you're operating under a outcomes-based program, then we are interested in kind of aligning with you, if you will, to produce those three-part aim outcomes. So the first question is it clearly, do you have other business arrangements that support you pursuing the three-part aim outcome? We'll end up using the quality metrics that end up being the basis for the shared savings program, which, as you can tell from the metrics that are in there today, oftentimes and in many cases align with other initiatives that are out there. So that will kind of evolve as we see the final rule. But our expectation is that we'll be well aligned, we think, on the three dimensions, if you will, of the triple aim.
Your next question comes from the line of Vic Saney from Florida Accountable. Your line is open.
Question is, there is a 50% mandatory EMR for new ACOs. In the state of Florida, only 19% physicians are on EMR, and currently EMRs are being given by hospitals that are wanting to acquire physician practices, therefore clearly missing the triple aim, not just for Medicare, but for private payers as well. In this new Pioneer program, will there be some allowances to build up to 50% EMR?
Let John Boehm comment on this, but first, that is a second-year requirement, not at the entry point to the ACOs, and this is something we're taking comment on. I mean, among the comments we'll be receiving will be about the EHR requirement. We look forward to hearing how people comment on it. Peter Lee has a comment he'll make. Maybe
yeah, so because that relative to the – in the Pioneer ACO, it is that by the end of 2012, so folks should have 2 years to be at that 50% primary care meeting the EHR standard. That's within the Pioneer program specifically.
But on the base program, we are still taking comment on, right, on that provision. We have heard a lot of concern regarding the 50% threshold, but we're still in the comment phase, and that's what will be addressed in the final rule.
The question is back to Jonathan. Jonathan, this is Sandeep Bajaj.
How are you?
How are you, Jonathan? The other question is for the independent practitioners in Florida, which is 80% of Florida that are wanting to do ACOs, is CMI looking at methodology where they can, you know, have a sit-down meeting and help them in promoting this concept of CMS? Because at this point, the acquisition of physician practices by hospitals is at full speed, and I don't think that their aim is to reduce costs, actually to acquire physician practices to make sure that they have control.
Right. So part of today's announcement is to also talk about the assistance that the Innovation Center is considering proposing to help organizations participate within the BASE program. I'll turn it over to Rick to talk about that assistance.
Yeah, I think we realized that I think if we think about the spectrum of the delivery system, where different types of providers are in terms of their ability to both deliver seamless coordinated care today and their ability to kind of get into the ACO world in the future, we know that there are some folks that on one end of the spectrum are already providing that kind of care and have all the capabilities and are ready to go. And on the other end of that spectrum are folks who are providing traditional office-based, perhaps primary care or office and hospital-based care, that's traditional fee-for-service without the wherewithal to enter into this new world of ACO. So we understand that's the spectrum. And really what we're offering today is a suite of products that or opportunities that address people at different places in that spectrum. So for folks who are ready to go and provide services, the Pioneer model is there for them to move rapidly and show what's possible, show the country what's possible in terms of delivering better outcomes for folks with fee-for-service Medicare. For folks who are not ready, we're offering the assistance program, or we're asking for comment on an assistance program, an advanced payment program, and that may include doctors. It could include other kinds of providers who don't have either the capabilities today and don't have the access to capital. So we want to know from you all what should that form of advanced payment look like. And we're open to different suggestions about it. We're sensitive to some of the issues that you've raised. But we're addressing both ends of that spectrum today. That assistance would be for people who go into the shared savings program. And then finally, the third piece is the educational opportunity that we're offering, whereby we're going to try and bring the best ideas in the industry today from those folks who have been doing this, who know how to do it, and make it available to all those folks who are interested in providing this type of care but don't have those capabilities today. So between the shared savings program and the programs we're announcing today, we think we have a nice suite of offerings that make up Medicare's overall approach and strategy for helping providers become ACOs.
Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, next question.
Your next question comes from the line of David Morales from Steward Healthcare. Your line is open.
Great, thank you. My question is in regard to the payment. Let's assume that 25% of your volume is non-Medicare. How do you propose to pay for that side of the ledger, the non-Medicare bodies or volume?
This is Don, David. Pioneer program, like the ACO program and the main rule, involves payment for Medicare patients. We are looking for organizations that can align the incentives and the business plan they have for care with their private book of business as well, but that would be up to the contractual relationship they have with the commercial payers. Is that right, Rick?
Yes, I think, and we also know that there are fixed costs and then variable costs that an organization seeking to become an ACO will face, and so we're interested in input on how people, how we ought to think about that, and how you all are thinking about it in the delivery system. So that's the purpose, really, of asking for input, and we would hope, and we know, that there are many private insurers out there today that are interested in helping provider systems get up and going, get build their ACO capabilities. So we'd hope there often will be parallel activity coming from the private industry side.
Right, and is the period open for comment on that part of it? And I only ask because we, for example, have a significant number of lives under contract non-Medicare, but we would qualify for the Pioneer program. So aligning those two sides of our book of business would be critical for us.
I'd be very interested in your comments on that, and it will help guide us.
Great.
Thank you. Operator, next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Fox from Dean Health Plan. Your line is open.
Thank you. Yes, you had indicated that part of the one of the objectives of the Pioneer ACO is to accelerate the movement from fee-for-service and shared savings to population-based payments by the end of, I think it's the end of year three. Can you go into a little more detail about what the methodological approach would be for the population-based payments? Do you see these as being capitated-based payments, or when you say population-based payments, do you mean bundle payments based on sort of health conditions? So if you could provide a little more clarity around what you mean by that. And then the second part of the question has to do with some of our some health plans also serve Medicare, and they obviously have commercial members, but they also have a Medicaid line of business. And to the extent that all, you know, everyone is sort of going to be served through this ACO model, and all the efficiencies that are created through the ACO also translate and filter down to Medicaid people that are seeing Medicaid patients. Many states, the way they deal with Medicaid rates, it's all encounter-based. So the more efficient we become in the delivery of services to Medicaid, the more the rates get ratcheted down, because that creates the new base for rates in the following year. So it would be nice if CMS could also align those two things, where they're sort of creating the incentives for those plans and really have a broad spectrum continuum of the products that they offer to their members, from commercial to Medicaid to Medicare. So those things are all in alignment. You're not penalized for being efficient, being incentivized in one area for being efficient, and then penalized in another for being efficient.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me just address the Medicaid. This is Rick Gilfillan. Michael, the Medicaid side of this is very important to us. We're working closely with Cindy Mann, who runs the Medicaid office, and with Melanie Bella, who runs the dual eligible office. And we're very interested in solutions that include Medicare, Medicaid, and CHIP recipients or beneficiaries. So, and we're also getting a number of inquiries from states who are interested in finding ways to align their approach with the effort coming out of Medicare. So I think it's a natural fit, and whether or not it's a state that does its Medicaid business through health plans, or whether it's a state that has a fee-for-service approach, I think we're finding interest everywhere, and we would hope that health plans would be interested in aligning their arrangement with providers with the approach we're describing. In terms of the population-based payments, there's a model in the RFA, the request for applications, which is on our website, which describes one approach, We've also asked folks to think about alternative approaches and give us suggestions. But basically, the model that is described there involves a reduction in fee-for-service payments to ACO providers and a per-beneficiary payment of the population-based payment approach.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Dale Hamilton from Community Health and Counseling Services. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'm just curious in terms of if there are any plans, discussions about the inclusion of some important sectors of the healthcare system that have been excluded from the ACO participation?
Dale, are there particular sectors you're asking about?
Home care and mental health.
The statutory model for the ACO is a primary care-based model, and there are certain restrictions we have as to how we can identify patients with the providers centered in the primary care world. So we are following the guidance Congress gave us in centering the ACO, a patient alignment process on primary care. My own belief is that ACOs that are serious about better care, better health, and lower costs will be reaching out very, very strongly to behavioral health. They'll be focusing on particularly populations that have particular disease burdens, because that's the way that they'll improve both the care of the population and their own prospects for shared savings. So I do think this ACO progress is going to be good news for populations that have a significant burden and for behavioral health. John, you may want to comment further on that.
No, I think that's right. I think while we have rules to how we have to assign beneficiaries to an ACO, we have built the proposed rule to really encourage the development of very integrated healthcare delivery systems. Home health, behavioral health have great potential to better manage, better coordinate care. That should be a huge benefit to an ACO structure.
Yeah, just one other thought. This is Rick. And, you know, the ACO effort is part of a much broader set of activities that we're pursuing within CMS to support the delivery system as it transforms into this future of a seamless, coordinated, safe care system. And we have many initiatives that are moving in that direction. One, specifically getting to this point of behavioral health, would be the Medicaid Health Home Initiative, under which states can apply for reimbursement match of 90% for programs that provide health home services. And we are hearing from states and working closely with states to develop health home programs that have a strong focus on behavioral health and home health services.
Your next question comes from the line of Bob King from Goal/QPC. Your line is open.
Yes, hello. This is Bob King from New Hampshire, Quality Geek, and I'm thrilled with the announcements today. We're working with several organizations that are shovel-ready, and I think this is going to move us forward a lot more quickly. One of the focuses of the French healthcare ministry is the Pareto chart, focusing on the vital few, and one of the other things that thrilled me is the push to get significant results in the next 3 years. And I'm wondering if you could comment on to what extent you're being able to focus your work on proven methodologies as people are applying for this, rather than more just casting the net really wide and not getting those significant results.
Well, Bob, it's great to hear from you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
The smart ACO is going to focus a lot of energy on the vital few, on the patients and families of greatest need, because that's where the best improvements in care and, frankly, the most savings and costs will come from providing better care to those particularly stressed individuals. We know that there are great models of care out there. One of the other important functions of the Innovation Center is to be able to identify and help spread the great models of care focused largely on chronically ill people, because that's where the better care, better health, and lower cost could be achieved. I do think there are many, many programs and approaches to better care that are ready for use, already well proven and ready to pick up, and I expect ACOs will be very interested in finding and adopting those best practices.
Great, thanks.
Operator, we have time for just one last question.
Your next question comes from the line of Charles McLean from the McGarry Medical Foundation. Your line is open.
This conference call format really models good participant engagement. I'm wondering, how important is scalability, clonability of approach to obtaining ACO startup funding, and do you have criteria for scalability to guide applicants? It's an area of inquiry that I'd like to hear more about as part of your learning sessions.
Can you say a word, Charlie, more about what you mean by scalability?
Yes. I believe one of the criteria was how effectively can an innovative existing program be cloned for application elsewhere as an innovation? How transferable is it with what guidelines?
I understand. You're correct. The Innovation Center is very interested in discovering and nurturing and studying innovations which can be spread. In fact, part of its charge is to be able to find those great examples and then give them to the Secretary for her to put into regulatory language or find other mechanisms to spread and diffuse change. The Pioneer ACO program, I think, will be a good example of that by taking up to 30 organizations that are really able to create the cutting edge of the kind of improvements we're looking for with the ACO program overall. It'll be instructed to everyone about how to make that program more and more vibrant. Rick?
Yeah, I think that we're interested in scaling right from the get-go, and so we are interested in hearing and from folks their plans about how they think their models, whether it's ACOs or other models that we'll be testing, how they think they could be more widely disseminated. And one of the reasons for us to be engaged in the learning systems in the accelerated development sessions is exactly that, to start the process of scaling and to kind of feed those best practices across from pioneers, from folks who have been doing this, to folks who are just starting to learn. And so we think there's going to be an important dynamic created nationally where folks, actually they'll be learning going in both directions, from folks new to the business to the pioneers and the other way. And we're going to find out together the best ways to kind of spread as well as build ACOs. And that's part of our plan for all the models from the Innovation Center.
Great. And with that, I just have a few parting remarks about how if you join this call late, you can call into the number 1-800-642-1687, use the same access code that you just used, and you can hear this call in its entirety for the next 2 days. Also, if you want any more information about any of the three announcements that you just heard about, you can visit the Innovation Center website at innovations.cms.gov. That's innovations with an S, .cms.gov. You can also submit comments on the Advanced Payment Initiative to advpayaco@cms.hhs.gov. That's advpayaco@cms.hhs.gov. And thanks again to everyone who joined today on the call.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.